because I see it, you know, in the, a lot of the pregame stuff. I follow all these different accounts that showcase individual infielders getting in their pregame work, and because like, I'm obsessed with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I do think he works really hard. I do think he really cares. The production's just not there. Now, is he going through a bad slump? Did he have a career year last year? Like, you look at his just his baseball card, Joe, right? And you look at where he was the last couple of years versus now. 2023, he ended up batting 217 for the year. 217 with 24 jacks. So it was a down year just a couple of years ago. Now, last year, he had a really nice year in terms of home runs and RBIs. Batted 251. If you told me he could be somewhere in the 240s, okay, and I can get the 25 jacks, and let's just say 80, 85 RBIs, that would be an unbelievable turnaround from where we're at right now, because I'm looking at a guy right now who's just, he's not driving the ball and barreling it up the way I would personally like. I wanted a little more from him. And I'm not saying that this is the worst contract the Giants have ever signed, and I'm not saying that it's done and it's over and he sucks and is it. No, he's just, they need more from him. And if they want to make the playoffs this year, there's no way I could see them making the playoffs without a better version of Willy Adames.
I always root for the players, especially guys like Willy Adames, who, by all accounts, is a really good guy. He came on our airwaves again with Willard and Dibbs. Seemed like a great guy. Like, the stock was at an all-time high from Giants fans just a couple months ago, again. But then the season started, and he just hasn't produced. And listen, we're just going to call it like it is. When he starts playing better and when he starts hitting better, we'll talk about it. We'll discuss it. But right now, he's not. And it's a thing. It's a thing right now. So much so that Bob Melvin, his manager, is saying he's trying to do too much right now.
Obviously, he hasn't gotten off to the start that he wants to. And I think you tend to try to do a little too much sometimes when you get in big RBI situations. I mean, he's kind of known for that. He had a ton of three-run homers last year. So it's going to come. I think, you know, maybe just trying to do a little bit too much and swinging a little bit early in those situations right now.
And that was Bob Melvin after yesterday's loss in Detroit.
It's funny that he said that last year, that he had a lot of three-run homers. He did leave 285 guys on base, which was a career high for him. That, I think it goes to more tell you how prolific the whole offense was for the Brewers.
Right.
Last year, that he hit a lot of three-run homers and still left almost 300 guys on base this year. Last year.
Totally.
Again, I think that the number one thing for me is the extra base hits. And what I mean, like, just like gap to gap driving the ball. And I think that there's obviously a stadium conversation where you could hit to right center in Milwaukee Stadium and drive the ball that way and backspin it and get it out and be able to hit balls off the wall. In our stadium, that's not going to happen.
Well, he actually talked about that with Willard and Dibbs on coming to Oracle Park and playing here. You want to take a listen?
Yeah, I would, because I don't think people understand. It's not just the stadium, which is a big part of it. It's also, you're at the marine layer level, and it's cold and foggy, and the ball doesn't move.
Not a dome like in Milwaukee or Tampa, where he's previously played. Here's Willy Adames a couple months ago on with Willard and Dibbs.
Not really, man. Not really. I really don't worry about, like, ballparks. Because I'm like, you know, if I see the ball good, I'm good. You know, like, I don't care if it's big or not. Like, if it's big, just hit a lot of doubles, you know, like hit a lot of triples, you know, score a lot of runs. And then, you know,
oh, no.
Don't worry about the homers. Whenever they go out, they go out. But I feel the main thing for me is just like feeling comfortable at a stadium. Not about like, okay, I could hit like 40 homers here. Like, I don't worry about that. If that happens, it would be great. It would be amazing. But like, we're not worried about stuff like that. At least myself, I'm not worried about that stuff.
You know, it's. I get where he's going. Like, if I see the ball well and I hit well, I can hit anywhere. And like, look, Tony Gwynn, did it matter that he played at Jack Murphy Stadium? Or would Tony Gwynn have been Tony Gwynn pretty much anywhere?
Guy's a contact hitter.
Exactly.
Him and Ichiro, the Pete Roses, they can hit anywhere.
But there are some guys who perfectly fit a ballpark. Aaron Judge, Yankee Stadium, short right porch,
perfect.
Right center field swing. Like, he's going to hit 60 or whatever home runs in that ballpark, given the way that his swing path is and everything like that.
Totally.
Like, I think about Wade Boggs with the short left field porch, even though he was a left-handed hitter. How many balls did he hit off that green monster, right, because of his approach?
Right.
I think he would have been pretty good anywhere. But it definitely helped him playing in that ballpark.
Right, all those Astros players, right, with that short left field, right, the whatever they call it over there, the train tracks.
Yes.
Left at Minute Maid Park, not Minute Maid anymore, but you know what I'm saying.
And that's what Bregman was actually talking about now that he's a Boston Red Sox, that the Fenway Wall reminds him of the, what are they called, the Crawford boxes?
There you go, the Crawford boxes, thank you. The train tracks, sometimes they hit it up
but there. I do believe like that there is an element of the ballpark does factor in a little. I don't think it's everything, but it is part of it.
16 extra base hits thus far for Willy Adames this year. Not great. Not great. Willy Adames.
Are you panicking on it?
I'm not panicking on it, but you know what? Like, part of me, like, I understand we're having this conversation because he's the highest paid player in the history of the sport, and maybe it's a little interesting that, you know, and maybe because it's been 49ers and Warriors dominating, we're just now, like, the Giants are just now becoming the full, you know, picture for us here in the Bay Area. I am just a little bit like, okay, that's great that he's this rah-rah guy. That's great that he's, like, that he's, you know, by all accounts, a good leader and everything like that. I don't really care about any of that if you're not producing. I just don't. Does that sound like me being just like a hater?
Well,
like,
I think it's, no, I don't think it's being a hater. I do believe culture and leadership has a price tag. Like Andre Iguodala, when he wasn't producing at the end of his career, there was value of him being on that
bench. But you just said it right there. He was on the bench. I don't expect anything. Willy Adames is playing in every single game. He's getting every single at bat, and he's just not hitting the ball. So if you're not hitting the ball, you said it was a game of failure. This is a game of, like, ultimate failure right now for him, which sucks. I'm not even trying to be, like, cruel or anything.
No, you're just calling it like you see it.
It's just not good right now. And
so do you think that this team, given where they were at, because, like, I remember when the Warriors stunk forever, and it was like, we need a leader. Let's get Ronnie Turioff and Derek Fisher.
Oh, my God.
And there was a – it's laughable now, but there was a price tag to bringing in somebody who was more of a culture guy.
Sure, but you kind of already had the culture guy in there already, right? You had a Matt Chapman there, right? Did you want to shift the culture? Like, what were you trying to do?
I think that you needed another. Well, A, you needed an everyday shortstop.
You just needed another player.
Okay, he is an upgrade over what they had last year at the position.
Yeah, because I actually know there's one person that's going to be there every day,
which
helps.
Yes, and defensively, he's better than what they had last year there. So that is an upgrade. I guess the question then becomes, like, how much do you pay for culture and leadership? Because I do think that they got this guy because of some culture and leadership. They needed somebody who could connect the entire clubhouse. It felt like multiple clubhouses the last couple of years, especially with the whole Jock Peterson card thing.
See, that works. That could work if I have everything else in place for the cultural leadership and the rah-rah guy. Because I liken that to, like, Hunter Pence. When the Giants acquired him, you remember, you think of all Hunter Pence, oh, the speech, oh my God, he rallied us around him. We were down all in the series and we came all the way back, you know, against the Cardinals. Oh my God. Like, you think of Hunter Pence and what he meant to those teams, right? As a culture setter. Now, he had some timely hits as well, but he wasn't this guy that was, you know, amazing offensively right off the rip. But with him, I had all these other guys. I had Posey. I had Crawford, right? I had these made guys already instilled in this organization. Maybe not Crawford then. Maybe he was just becoming but Buster Posey for sure at that point. Amongst others with the pitching staff,
Pablo
right? Pablo was a big culture guy. Thank you. So with Willie, he needs to be that guy, but also that could go to the side for me right now. As far as if he's pressing because of the fan base right now, like that's a problem. If that's in his head right now, they're not even booing him. Like, how could you be feeling that right now when they're not even getting out? Like, if he was in Philly right now, Joe, they would be letting him hear it.
Well, I'm glad you brought Philly up, because Philly does obviously air out their grievances. But Philly, of all fan bases, was the fan base that when Trey Turner was struggling for multiple months after signing a mega deal with the Phillies, one of their YouTubers who's been following the team for a long, long time and has a big following, did this whole, hey, let's rally behind Trey Turner. They did a Netflix doc on it, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, when he comes back from this road trip, let's give him a standing ovation. Why are you rolling your eyes?
It just seems so disingenuous. I don't know.
Why do you say that?
The whole thing seems so sterile. Come on, guys. We're on YouTube and we're going to cheer on this guy. It just seems so just manufactured, and I don't know.
I mean, it worked. Did you see what Trey Turner's numbers were after that?
What are they now?
These are on your rundown if you want.
Oh, they are. Oh, rundown. I always look at the rundown, Sam. You know that. Come on, hold on.
That's, you don't need to lie to me, though.
No, I do look at the rundown. I promise I do. I'm pulling up right now. Okay, here we go. Bob Melvin, grace period contracts, Giants at 54 games, Scott Cousins. No, we're not there yet. No, get it for me, Sammy. Continue, Joe. But what happened?
Well, basically, Trey Turner, you know, stepped up to the plate, and the entire fan base rose as one and cheered him on. It was, you know, it was like a seminal moment in the year, and then from that point on, he went on a tear.
I found it. Okay, so August 4th, 2023, Trey Turner was hitting .235, .290, .368. That's what he was slashing right there. 10 home runs, 60 runs, and then 34
A little ribbies. Better than what you've seen from Adames through 2 months.
There you go. The rest of the way, the remaining games that he had, 48 on the schedule, he batted .337, .389, .668, 16 jacks, 42 ribbies, 9 stolen bases, 42 runs. So you're saying what we need to do is get a YouTube video out, tell everyone to cheer Willie Adames so that he could get a RBI or get a base hit, get a home run, get something. That will be the spark. Is that what you're telling me, Joe?
Well, what I'm telling you is that booing him or like losing our minds with him this early on is probably not the most productive. Now,
look, we haven't done that, though.
No, I don't think you have, but I do see, like, I put it out on social media yesterday, and I'll just read you some of the comments. I think a lot of Giants fans online, which doesn't represent all the fans, no. It's a small portion, are pretty freaking frustrated with him. I mean, I can see Chapman and Adames turning around, but I'm not hopeful with Wade and Bailey at all. But if you don't get Adames going, we're in big trouble. This is from Scott. Another one. The biggest dud is Wade on the team, but that being said, he's not paid a fraction of what Willie Adames is making. If Willie doesn't turn it around, we're in big trouble. Like, a lot of people are coming down his particular road when it comes to he's got to get it going right now. And I don't think just booing the guy is going to get anything going. No, look, he's a professional. He's going to tune things out. You know, I'm sure that whether it's cheers or boos or whatever, it's not going to make the ultimate. I'm not pretending like this is a Disney movie. That's not what I'm getting at.
No, I'm feeling some type of way about this, and I get it. It's different scenario, different circumstances, but the fact that we were booing Brandon Ayuk in 3 games last year, like we were booing that guy coming off a second team All-Pro season, a guy that started with the organization, the guy that was drafted by the organization, and we were booing him. You couldn't wait to boo that guy.
I didn't.
You could no, you didn't.
But
fans couldn't wait to boo guy off the field, and we're giving Willie Adames this grace period. Again, I'm not saying booing him is the right thing to do, but I do like how we seem to pick and choose when to boo, when not to boo with some of these guys. I mean, Willie Adames is the highest paid player in the history of the franchise.
But he's not going anywhere.
Brandon Ayuk wasn't the highest paid player in the history of the franchise.
Yeah.
He wasn't the highest paid player in the history of the franchise, and we're booing his ass in 3 games.
I didn't think that was fair.
3 games.
But I didn't think that was that fair. And I also believe that, like, there's different levels of booing. Wouldn't you agree? So, like,
what are they? Break them down for me.
Well, no, like when was the last time you booed a player or a team?
Boy. From my couch, maybe? No, but like, I don't, it depends. I'm a father now, so if I'm at the game with Benny, I don't really boo, and maybe that's me being soft now.
Also a Raider fan, so it's definitely happened.
Well, yes, that is true, but probably, honestly, I can remember a time at an A's game, this guy's first ever appearance with the team, taking over as the closer for Grant Balfour. It was Jim Johnson, formerly of the Orioles, who had a lot of saves there, a lot of saves, and he had an opportunity either to keep the game tied or they were up a run. It was one or the other, and he blew it, and it was horrible. He gave in like 3 runs, right? The bases were juiced, and everything unraveled. First game of the year, opening day at the Collie against like the Cleveland Indians or something at the time, and they booed him off the field, and I was part of it. They booed him off the field. Done. You're cooked. It's over with.
One appearance,
and he never recovered from that, and the wheels came off. And I think they either released him, DFA'd, I don't know what happened. He was just shot. And you saw it right then and there. Again, all it took was one game. And you know why that happened?
Huh.
That was just a lot of frustration, I think, from A's fans boiling for the last couple of years of getting so close, getting the game. Because I want to say this was 2015. Let me check. 2013, maybe. I'll check the year. But the year wasn't great. It didn't start off great. And there was a lot of frustration from the years prior of getting close, right? But you get stymied at the end in the playoffs and you're a first round exit. and there was a lot of frustrations to start that game one, and he got rid of a fan favorite. And that guy took his role. Now, there wasn't a fan favorite last year for Willie Adames, right? You mentioned the guys that were there. The Nick Ahmeds of the world.
Yeah.
Right? Like, come on. There wasn't a set
guy there.
He's not
replacing. Like, had he been the one to just replace Crawford right away?
That would have been different,
though. I think it would be a little different.
That would be different. But the fact that there was a stopgap in between there, that helps.
So, like you're bringing up all these different, like, booing. Like, so.
Yeah, for you. When's the last time you booed,
Joe? Well, I'm not a big booer in terms of, like, booing my I boo situations. So, like, for example. No, seriously.
Yeah, no, yeah.
The Niners have the ball. Okay, and they've had maybe a lackluster offensive performance in the first half. And let's say they're at like the 35-yard line going the full length of the field. And there's like 50 seconds to go. They got two timeouts. You got nothing to lose. And they kneel on the ball.
The worst.
And they go into halftime like not trying to be aggressive. That I will give the old boo on. Like, right. Come on. Like, let's come on. Do something
here. The boo birds.
You get to the 40-yard line. Okay, you're the Niners. And, you know, Jake Moody's your kicker, and I don't want him kicking at all, and you don't go for it, all right? You do that fake thing. I hate this. You go, hut, 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 and I'm never going to hike it.
The hard count.
The automatic, you know, penalty to go back a little just to punt the ball after I've crossed the 50, that drives me crazy. That I will boo. So I boo, like, the team philosophy, if you will, the aggression from the head coach. Not the individual. Now, I have booed individuals. I will admit that. There was a time I booed Mike Dunleavy.
Oh.
Right? When Mike Dunleavy was a Warrior.
And now you guys are best friends hanging out at, you know, CYO basketball games.
Yes.
I'm kidding.
There was a time and place where I booed Armando Benitez. Oh. Or I booed Barry Zito. I remember specifically booing Barry Zito after a game he got yanked in the second inning. It's just like, and that was multiple years of frustration pouring over. The one that I sent to Carter this morning, and I'd love to play the sound at some point, was Alex Smith. I remember distinctively, the Giants are facing the Braves. I'm watching the game in the parking lot at Candlestick. It's Niners-Eagles. It's October 10th, 2010. And Alex Smith was just, it was years of oh my God, I'm so frustrated. And he had one of the worst turnovers I have ever seen in my life.
It was pretty bad. We watched it this morning. It was awful.
And all of Candlestick booed that man off the field. And then Singletary turned and, like, undressed him on the sideline, only to have Alex throw a couple touchdowns late, which were meaningless, and then throw the worst interception any of us has ever seen. So, yeah, there's specific sequences where I boo individual players. But typically on those, it's years of pent-up frustration. And it's not just performance. Like, Armando Benitez was performance as well as his particular demeanor and dismissal of the fans. Barry Zito was years of frustration, and I think that, like, also it felt like he didn't care. And he's admitted this years later that, like, you know, he was rooting against the team's success and whatnot. Alex wasn't just Alex. Alex was Alex. The fact we didn't pick Aaron Rodgers and they won a Super Bowl the year prior. The fact that, you know, Singletary was underwhelming and we were mad at the Yorks. And, like, so all my booing is a little different than maybe, like, just boo you, Brandon Bell, you suck. I'm not really the guy in Major League that does that.